Quinton here makes sustainable clothing.
Yep.
His shipping company, FedEx, has set a goal of having carbon-neutral operations by 2040.
Great news.
This sustainability effort makes Quinton very happy.
Nice.
FedEx, where now meets next.
Astrobiologists increasingly believe that conditions are frequently right for life. Hydrogen, oxygen, carbon, and the life-sustaining molecules they form are the most common substances in the universe, and we know there are millions, potentially billions, of rocky planets just like Earth, orbiting stars just like our sun, in our galaxy alone. The best in Bitcoin made audible. I am Guy Swan, and this is Bitcoin Audible. What is up, guys? Welcome back to Bitcoin Audible. I am Guy Swan, the guy who has read more about Bitcoin than anybody else you know. We have got a read today that I have been sitting on for a long time, and I wasn't able to finish all of it, so I cut it in half, so it'll be a clean two parts. I'm hoping I can get the second part out tomorrow. This is one we dug into quite a while ago, and I've been meaning to get back to it. And there's actually a new thing about this, a new piece from Unchained Capital, actually, that's kind of an exploration of how this is used, or how to imagine this in basically a world where it comes to fruition. And this is the Bitcoin Astronomy series by Dhruv Bansal. It's a fascinating thought experiment on scaling blockchains to an alien civilization and how to think about, or to the size of a solar system or interstellar civilization, not necessarily an alien, even though it moves into the concept of extraterrestrials more specifically in this piece in part three. Now, I will have part one and two available in the show notes if you have not listened and or read them. They're fascinating. It's if you're a nerd like me, you're really, really going to enjoy this one. And it's just fun to think about the laws of Bitcoin, like how to think of, you know, Bitcoin communication and the consensus problem of Bitcoin when you begin to reach out at certain distances of the speed of light, the limits of actual physical communication, because these things matter and they alter the problem of consensus. And it's just really fun. It's just really fun to dig into. Like I said, I'm a nerd, so hopefully you guys enjoy it as much as I do. But we're going to dig into the first half of the third law of Bitcoin astronomy. Really quick, I just want to thank our sponsors for today, and we will jump right into this read. I am going to be plugging in my Block Clock Micro from CoinKite tomorrow, and I'm very excited about it. I'm moving my desk, I'm making some changes because I got to get out of Rad's room, and I am so stoked to finally have this. CoinKite is a wonderful sponsor. They make incredible products, Bitcoin security hardware devices like the Cold Card, the Tap Signers, the Open Dimes. They just have so many amazing products. And of course, the Block Clock, which is the thing I'm obsessing over at the moment. 5% off for you guys by using code BitcoinAudible. The show notes will have all of the details and the links. And then when you get your Cold Card, you're going to want to stack like mad, and the best way to stack is automatically. Get it to automatically stack with your Swan Bitcoin savings account and automatically withdraw. And if you want to go next level, you want to get, you know, the concierge service, you want to get your IRA and your retirement and your business, you want to really figure out how to integrate your life into Bitcoin, Swan Private is the service you are looking for, and an excellent way to meet the actual team and learn what Bitcoin is all about. Pure Signal, come to the Pacific Bitcoin Conference on November 10th and 11th, link in the show notes, with a 20% discount code, guys. And lastly, there's the fiat cheat code, the Fold Card. This is a debit card that gets you sats back on every single thing that you purchase. I use this as my daily driver. I can spend that gets me, you know, could get me 2%, could get me 5%, could get me up to 100% back, which I have actually won once. Or I can select the 1% base on just everything. It is a very easy way to be constantly stacking sats. Check them out. Link in the show notes. And 5,000 free sats if you use my referral. And with that, it's time to get into today's read. From the Unchained Capital blog, and it's titled Bitcoin Astronomy, Part 3, by Dhruv Bansal. Published at unchainedcapital.com. A future history of first contact between human and alien blockchains. This is part 3 in a series of speculations about the hyper-Bitcoinized future. In part 1, we defined the first law of Bitcoin astronomy and described how it leads to new blockchains as humanity expands through the solar system. In part 2, we described a second law, which leads to nested blockchains the size of solar systems and beyond, hashing vast energies on cosmic timescales. Though we did discuss interstellar colonies and blockchains, we focused our attention in parts 1 and 2 on our solar system and species. In this part, we expand our perspective to include the whole galaxy and the other species and civilizations that may already call it home. We begin with a warning about the dangers of generalizing about other civilizations when we have only our own civilization as an example. Yet, we will press on regardless and speculate that aliens, assuming they exist, are likely to develop blockchains of their own. Our galaxy may be full of technological, communicating, proof-of-work hashing alien civilizations. What will happen when we detect their block headers? The Mirror of Universality. Quote, "Perhaps the most valuable part of these extraordinary speculations is going to be the mirror with which we confront ourselves obliquely, as we try to ask the question, what the future is like." Philip Morrison, professor of physics at MIT. Our speculations about extraterrestrial life are always biased by our understanding of ourselves. NASA's maxim for finding life in our solar system, follow the water, assumes life elsewhere requires liquid water because all life on Earth does. Similarly, our speculations about alien civilizations are biased by our own culture, technology, and history. The search for extraterrestrial intelligence, or SETI, assumes aliens are talking to us because we ourselves like to be heard. SETI listens for narrow-band radio signals because that's how we communicate here on Earth. We cannot escape our biases, but we can temper them with the knowledge that alien life and civilizations, should they exist, must operate by the shared rules of our common universe. If our speculations are to avoid anthropomorphism, we must identify universals, properties which are likely to characterize life and civilization anywhere they occur. Unfortunately, our sample size of one biosphere with one young civilization makes it difficult to define such universals. Though all life on Earth shares the same liquid water-based biochemistry, this is no guarantee that life elsewhere must do so. And though radio waves are a natural technology for interstellar communication, it's possible that ours is the only civilization to use them. The vast scale of the universe and the tremendous variation it contains potentially means there are no universals that characterize life and civilization. We may be completely alone in the universe, a temporary statistical fluke in entropy production needing neither explaining nor purpose. Or perhaps the universe is full of life that is incomprehensible to our physics and biology. Beings we cannot grasp experiencing realities we cannot conceive. Speculating about universal properties of life and civilization is thus a kind of mirror we hold up to ourselves and our own civilization. The reflection we see may teach us more about ourselves than it does about aliens. Life is common. But that doesn't mean we have no objective basis from which to begin our speculations. The fossil record confirms that simple life began on Earth almost immediately after our planet cooled. Either life can evolve from matter quickly, or life was already around, waiting to settle in. Life on Earth also survived several mass extinctions due to geological processes, biofeedback, and asteroid impacts. This means life is hardy. Where the conditions are right, it persists. Astrobiologists increasingly believe that conditions are frequently right for life. Hydrogen, oxygen, carbon, and the life-sustaining molecules they form are the most common substances in the universe, and we know there are millions, potentially billions, of rocky planets just like Earth, orbiting stars just like our sun, in our galaxy alone. Carbon-based, water-soluble, simple life is probably common in our galaxy. If we allow ourselves to entertain the possibility of other, more exotic kinds of life, then life should only be more common. Since life is an active process, it alters its environment, creating chemical signatures whose spectra can be resolved from light years away. Earth's oxygen-rich atmosphere, sustained by photosynthesis, has been visible across the galaxy for billions of years. We are about to launch telescopes capable of measuring the spectra of planets with biospheres like Earth's orbiting faraway stars. If simple life is common in the galaxy, we will see evidence of it within the decade. The Fermi Paradox.
A sad spectacle. If they be inhabited, what a scope for misery and folly. If they be not inhabited, what a waste of space.
Thomas Carlyle on Stars. But what about complex life? The kind we believe can evolve intelligence and civilizations. Civilizations, like life itself, are active agents, transforming their environments and declaring their presence to the cosmos through methods both intended, signals and probes, and unintended, waste heat. The traditional wisdom of astrobiology, confirmed by decades of fruitless SETI searches, is that such civilizations cannot be common, as common as we suspect life to be, simply because we would have noticed them by now. This tension between how common life seems to be and the lack of any credible evidence of alien intelligence is sometimes referred to as the Fermi paradox. The Fermi paradox isn't really a paradox at all. A simple, if disappointing, solution to the paradox is that ours is the only intelligence in the galaxy. Another more optimistic solution is that we simply haven't looked very hard. The galaxy is vast, and we have expended few resources searching it for signals. It is possible for our galaxy to be home to thousands of alien civilizations at various levels of technological advancement, yet for us to be completely oblivious to them all. These are but two of the most straightforward answers. There are many others, ranging from bleak, it is the nature of civilization to destroy itself, too terrifying. Elder predator civilizations exterminate all younger ones. Too whimsical. Our solar system is an interstellar zoo. An entire class of proposed solutions relies upon the idea of a great filter, something that prevents matter from evolving into communicating technological civilizations. Great filters are evolutionary, sociological, or technological barriers that many or most forms of life and civilizations never surmount, explaining why the galaxy is so quiet. Examples include the evolution of multicellular life, or intelligence, or the ability to survive exponential population growth, or environmental degradation after industrial revolutions. Cosmic sociology. Solutions to the Fermi paradox often make general statements about the motivations and behaviors of all possible extraterrestrial civilizations. Yet we lack any examples of civilizations other than our own. So how can we possibly generalize? We can't. Building a sociological theory of extraterrestrial civilizations through an inductive, data-driven scientific process is impossible. If we are to construct believable solutions to the Fermi paradox, we must use a more deductive method. In his novel, The Dark Forest, the science fiction author Cixin Liu gives a name to this mode of deduction: cosmic sociology, no doubt a department in the same building as Bitcoin astronomy. As one character explains, when there is nothing concrete to study, and surveys and experiments aren't possible, then the, quote, ultimate result will be purely theoretical. She goes on to describe axioms, what we would call universals, which she believes characterize extraterrestrial civilizations. We won't further spoil the plot, but suffice to say that her deductions about the Interstellar Society of Civilizations lead to a terrifying resolution to the Fermi paradox. It's not science, but it is compelling science fiction because Liu's choice of universals creates a reflection of our own civilization, recognizable yet dark. Proposed solutions to the Fermi paradox are often a kind of cosmic sociology, conclusions about the behavior of extraterrestrial civilizations based on elevating certain aspects of our own civilization to universals. They are not solutions to a paradox or problem, but rather interpretations of humanity's future, reflections in the mirror of universality. Blockchains are universal. What do we see when we look in the mirror? It's clear that we want to see blockchains, but it's no fun to simply declare that blockchains make reasonable universals for technological civilizations. We must motivate this conclusion somehow. Bitcoin arose on Earth from other proximate technologies to solve coordination problems. If these proximate technologies and coordination problems themselves are universal, then blockchains should be common through convergent evolution. Looking in the mirror again, let us practice cosmic sociology and begin with some more conservative universals. Communicating technological civilizations: 1. Have a society. Civilizations are composed of separate individuals acting out of rational self-interest with imperfect information. 2. Have finite resources. Civilizations are constrained by finite supplies of matter and energy. 3. Have no magic. No civilization possesses technologies we consider impossible today, for example, instantaneous communication or travel. 1 means we're not considering hive minds or perfectly coordinated machine intelligences, not because they cannot exist, but because we cannot understand their evolution or motivations. Similarly, 2 means we discount civilizations such as Star Trek's Federation, where replicators can create anything one wishes, and where money is obsolete because the only scarcity is the captain's chair. On the contrary, no matter how advanced a civilization's technology or culture, by 3, they must play by the same rules as we do. They must have limited resources and unlimited ambitions. Like us, they must still develop mechanisms for the allocation of scarce resources across competing individuals and conflicting interests. Let's see how a conservative choice of universals, 1 through 3, leads to the convergent evolution of Bitcoin-like blockchains among communicating technological civilizations. Social species use language and money. Should we ever detect an extraterrestrial signal, we would hope for it to be a message created by language users like us. Otherwise, all it tells us is, we are here and we have a transmitter. On Earth, the development of language was deeply intertwined with the evolution of social species such as humans. One of the reasons for our assumption 1, that alien civilizations are social species, is that we believe this makes them more likely to develop language and desire communications with other social species. But social species are also more likely to develop money. In Shelling Out, Nick Szabo traces the evolutionary connections between money, cooperation, and competition in early human societies. Inventing money, quote, enabled early modern humans to solve problems of cooperation that other animals cannot. If the concept of money increases the fitness of social species, then, like language, it may be a common adaptation evolved by successful social species. Once it evolves, money may even drive the evolution of language. Some of the earliest known examples of written human language are Sumerian clay tokens and tablets which record ancient transactions and debts. Early money in alien civilizations will be subject to the same selection pressures as early money on Earth. The soundness of a money is determined by the economy, not the biology of its users. If alien life chiefly arises on the surfaces of rocky planets, then metals such as gold might be comparably scarce, leading to their use as early monies on planets around the galaxy. But will all civilizations that invent money subsequently also invent blockchains through convergent technological evolution? Prerequisite technologies are universal.
All right, guys, let's pause right here and thank our sponsor. And on that note, the world's getting a little crazy out there. There's some regulatory issues that have popped up. There have been a couple of little scares in that regard. The entire financial system is teetering. Honestly, there is no better time than now. The best time was yesterday, but there's no better time than now to get yourself a solid hardware wallet like the Cold Card Mark IV from CoinKite and withdraw your coins. Do not leave them in someone else's possession. Not your keys, not your coins, not your cold card, not your cold storage. Lucky for you, CoinKite has literally every Bitcoin security and hardware solution that you could ask for. They've got the Cold Card hardware wallet, which is super versatile and just an awesome device. They've got the Open Dimes, they've got the Tap Signers, which that in combination with the Cold Card and some of the excellent new wallet UIs out there makes multi-sig so easy. And you can get 5% off with code BitcoinAudible. Don't wait. The world moves fast, and the past few months have already seen a lot of people getting hit for not holding their own keys. Please, please don't be that person. Check it out at guyswan.com/coldcard for more info. The link and the details are all right there in the description of this show. All right, let's jump back in. Prerequisite technologies are universal. This can only happen if the prerequisite technologies for blockchains, such as telecommunications, computing, and cryptography, are also universal. There are good reasons to believe that telecommunications and computing are universal developments in any technological civilization. Social species that expand to cover their home planet or solar system will not do so without building telecommunications networks. Computing is required for automating large societies and solving difficult problems of space science. Both technologies are intimately related, each benefiting from progress in the other. Besides, civilizations that don't develop these technologies won't be able to send or receive signals, so we'll consider them to be reasonable universals. What about cryptography? Cryptography arose on Earth from the need to keep secrets. Individuals in social species are likely to keep secrets, whether to collaborate with others or just to preserve their own privacy. As social species develop technologies such as writing or communications networks, they will develop techniques to transmit secrets securely. If aliens keep secrets, they'll invent cryptography. The particulars of alien cryptography might differ from ours. They might not use elliptic curves or modular arithmetic, but many computer scientists and mathematicians believe that P does not equal NP, which implies that questions with answers that are difficult to find but easy to check will always exist. Technological advances, such as quantum computers, may make it easier to find answers to certain classes of questions. But there will never exist a machine or algorithm which can efficiently answer every question. This means cryptography is universal. So if alien civilizations use money and develop telecommunications, computing, and cryptography, they'll have the necessary prerequisites to invent blockchains. But how do we know that they won't eventually invent something better? The third law. A fundamental assumption of this series is that proof-of-work blockchains, such as Bitcoin, are the optimal form of money. There is nothing better. Blockchains with more powerful virtual machines, which get around proof-of-work or employ quantum magic, don't exist or are bad ideas. The finite speed of communications, the energy costs of proof-of-work, and the long timescales of block settlement are essential features of Bitcoin and all successful blockchains. Consider the two laws that we proposed in parts 1 and 2 of this series. The first law of Bitcoin astronomy, or the law of hash horizons. Given constant hash rate, as a miner moves away from the center of hash of a blockchain, the number of blocks won by that miner statistically trends toward zero. The second law of Bitcoin astronomy, or the hash exclusion principle. Discrete physical and temporal scales provide hierarchical states for blockchains to occupy in order of increasing energy and distance from Earth. The first law implies that blockchains are limited by the speed of light to have a finite size related to their block time. But this limitation incentivizes remote, distant human colonies to build their own blockchains and defends them against aggression from incumbent empires. This encourages human expansion. Similarly, the second law forces successful blockchains to occupy a discrete spectrum of energy scales, sizes, and locations. This constraint ensures cooperation rather than competition between blockchains, political groups, or people of different energy scales, locations, and time preferences. Discrete blockchains bootstrap our civilization up the Kardashev scale, a necessary requirement for us to become an advanced, space-faring civilization capable of settling nearby stars. Bitcoin's constraints are not limitations that civilizations eventually evolve or innovate past. They are fundamental drivers of human and alien growth and innovation. Alien species which evolve language, money, telecommunications, computing, and cryptography should also develop a Bitcoin-like blockchain through convergent evolution. They will then experience their own version of hyper-Bitcoinization. This will also cause them to expand through their solar system and ascend the Kardashev scale. Blockchains are universal because hyper-Bitcoinization-induced expansion increases a species' evolutionary fitness. Viewed at an even grander scale, life is a process which increases its internal order by exploiting free energy gradients. Life is robust and common because it is thermodynamically favorable. The waste heat it produces has higher entropy than the energy it consumes. Species which evolve blockchains increase internal order, energy usage and entropy production from planetary to interstellar scales. This makes blockchains thermodynamically favorable adaptations as well. We summarize these conclusions in a third law of Bitcoin astronomy, the last of this series. The third law of Bitcoin astronomy, or the law of hash universality. Proof-of-work blockchains, such as Bitcoin, are a universal adaptation among communicating technological civilizations. The rest of this article pursues the consequences of the third law for SETI, first contact, and the Fermi paradox. Blockchains are the signal. Let us assume that technological civilizations are numerous and long-lived enough in the galaxy so that each should expect to interact with several others during its lifetime. Just as we tend to assume alien civilizations know about radio waves and nuclear fusion, taking the third law seriously means we should assume that each of these civilizations also knows about and uses blockchains. There's general belief among SETI researchers that should humanity actually discover or interact with another alien civilization, then it's likely for that civilization to be far more technologically advanced than we are. The combination of these ideas leads us to speculate that the first SETI signal humanity will detect will be an alien blockchain. Nakamoto's and Xenocoin. Suppose there exists an advanced Kardashev Type 2.x alien civilization occupying our neighborhood of the galaxy. Though we will never find out what they call themselves in their own myriad languages, we will refer to them here as the Nakamoto's. We don't know whether the Nakamoto civilization is composed of one government, culture, or even species, but we do know that their recorded history is many hundreds or thousands of years long. As anticipated by the Third Law, they invented their version of Bitcoin long, long ago on a planet a few tens of light years distant from Earth, at a time when humanity was inventing language. Since then, they have settled many star systems and built many stellar blockchains, such as Solcoin. They've even built an interstellar blockchain with block times of centuries to coordinate across their whole civilization and make investments on the longest of timescales. We'll refer to this blockchain as Xenocoin. Xenocoin is central to the Nakamoto's. It's the largest, most valuable, and lowest time preference blockchain in their civilization. In many ways, it is their civilization. The Nakamoto's have known about Earth for a long time. For most of their history, we were just another oxygen-rich, life-bearing world on the edge of their civilization. Too remote to settle, too uninteresting to explore, and likely to be already inhabited by some simian or cetaceous bio-archetype of dubious intelligence. But recently, the closest Nakamoto settlements to Earth began to notice some evidence of artificial signals emanating from our solar system. Some Nakamoto interest decides they should send us a message. What should they say? Science fiction often posits that advanced civilizations say hello messages, sometimes including mathematical, pictorial, or, in a third kind of story, musical structure. We have already transmitted such messages ourselves, through radio waves and artifacts attached to our space probes. But we're not considering arbitrary science fiction aliens. Our aliens are Nakamoto's. What kind of message would Nakamoto's send us? There can be only one answer. Sound money. The blocks and transactions of Xenocoin. Xenocoin transmissions are commonplace. One reason Nakamoto's are likely to send us Xenocoin is that Xenocoin blocks and transactions are already some of the most common and powerful transmissions in their interstellar communications networks. The archetypal hello, first contact messages in science fiction, originate from elder civilizations and are broadcast in every direction through space. They are cosmic lighthouses, greeting young civilizations as they enter the galactic community. But omnidirectional broadcasting on the interstellar scale isn't cheap. It requires hundreds of trillions of watts, many times more energy than used by our entire civilization today. Even advanced societies such as Nakamoto's, who perhaps can afford such an energy expense, would probably instead choose more efficient methods of communication. A narrow directed beam, such as a laser, can transmit information over extremely long distances for much lower energy cost than an omnidirectional beacon. The trade-off is that senders need to aim this beam at their intended recipients. This is unicast, not broadcast communications. Communication also requires that receivers must be listening at the time signals arrive from senders. Since interstellar transmission times are so long, senders should periodically retransmit messages if they want to be sure they are received. So, if it exists, interstellar communication at scale looks something like a unicast peer-to-peer network with frequent repetition due to a lack of transmission guarantees. Not every application is compatible with this network architecture. But blockchains, such as Xenocoin, are. The high availability and partitionability of blockchains and their built-in long consensus times are ideal matches for interstellar communications networks. Nakamotans have been transmitting Xenocoin blocks for millennia within their own civilization's interstellar communications networks. Xenocoin transactions are the most important and widely relayed messages in Nakamotan networks. Our solar system could be embedded with a Nakamotan neighborhood full of Xenocoin transmissions, yet we might never have seen any of these signals because none were aimed directly at us at the time that we were listening. But because of how common they are, it's possible that the first extraterrestrial signal humanity ever detects is a Xenocoin transmission that wasn't even aimed at us. Nakamotans are incentivized to transmit Xenocoin. But say we don't see a random or errant Nakamotan message. Suppose instead that some individuals or groups of Nakamotans decide to send a message to humanity on purpose. Why should this message be Xenocoin? Blockchains are, for the Nakamotans, what language is for us humans. Their society, technology, and perhaps their very minds have been shaped by blockchains for millennia. Nakamotans might regard a civilization that hasn't discovered blockchains the way we might regard a civilization that hasn't discovered language, barely a civilization at all. Sending a newly discovered species Xenocoin, engaging their response, may be the Nakamotan way to measure worthiness in conversation and trading partners. They may have even done this many times in the past for other species they discovered and integrated into their civilization. But even if Nakamotan scientists are endlessly curious about human civilization, perhaps we are also the first intelligent alien civilization they've found, they're still likely to send us Xenocoin messages. This is because the more civilizations that learn of Xenocoin, the more copies of the Xenocoin blockchain that exist, the more secure and valuable Xenocoin becomes. Nakamotans want us to use Xenocoin. They are incentivized to transmit Xenocoin messages, even at considerable expense, repeatedly and without any guarantee of response, the exact qualities SETI looks for in a signal. Communicating is computing. All right, we're going to pause there. I'm out of time today, so I'm not going to be able to finish this, and this is kind of like right halfway through, so I'm going to try to release the other half over the weekend, and then we'll probably publish this entire read just so that I might actually reboot the entire Bitcoin Astronomy as its own series, or I'll just have it available on the website or something. I'll decide what kind of fits best, but this is such a fun series, and one of the things that I really liked about this piece in particular was the exploration of consensus technology as a universal, and obviously the extrapolations of that as blockchains being kind of the culmination of the consensus medium of money. But that's something that, you know, when we talk about like communications networks as a universal for civilization, which I think is actually a pretty fair assessment, and I'll explain why from just the context of an analogy. I think the idea of a civilization is the ability for individual organisms to work as a combined organism, as a network. Like I think of networks of humanity, of humans, as joint, as collective organisms, as a form of organism that is built from our collective thought. And our communication systems, you think about it, they serve the exact same purpose. They even work similarly to something like a nervous system inside an organism. And what I think in that context, this is also why I'm a huge fan of Brandon Quittam's Bitcoin is Mycelium series, is because it's essentially a decentralized protocol to replace our centralized protocols for this exact purpose. So rather than being a centralized nervous system, which necessarily from the ability to compute all of the issues and all the needs of all of the individual people and where resources are needed to go and move and to be allocated throughout the economic system, throughout the economic organism, you need to be able to compute in a decentralized fashion. It's actually Jordan Peterson had such a really cool analogy that that I've heard from probably Durdigi, I think, has also kind of dug in this. I feel like there's a couple people who have kind of hit this idea. And this is also kind of very a Hayekian idea of the Austrian economic idea of a... it's not put in specifically these terms, but Jordan Peterson did use it this way, is the idea that everyone making trade-offs and economic decisions individually is like having a massively parallel supercomputer where every single person in society is contributing to the understanding of value and the skin in the game weight or measurement as to where that value needs to be, and all of their requisite knowledge of their local situation and the people that they trust or don't trust, the person they know who has resources that just nobody else has, you know, has those extra 2x4s in their garage. And so they call on that information, they call on that knowledge to acquire these resources or fill in a gap of value that no central institution could ever even come close to assessing or understanding the boots on the ground problems or knowing which person that, you know, some individual can trust with a task versus the person that they know is just going to pretend but can't really get it done or is just incompetent and, you know, is just going to play the victim, et cetera, et cetera. There's such a vast ocean of knowledge. There's such an incredible amount of knowledge and useful information for value and completing a task and like heading towards a goal just in a single person's life, just in a single person's situation, that no person could know that information for any 2 or 3 people, let alone a group of 5 people in some distant thing could, you know, read a textbook and then be able to make the decision for 300 million people without any skin in the game. And that at the heart of that problem is a consensus problem. It's a measurement problem as to how do you have all of the participants' knowledge behave as input into the collective? How do you enable cooperation with such huge knowledge gaps and the inability to centrally design decision-making that has to happen in the ground, in the situation, on the spot? And that requires a consensus technology. It requires something that serves the role of money. I think it just requires money in general. But money is essentially, just like a central nervous system is to an organism or a nervous system, a way to send electronic information across the body of an organism to respond to stimuli in the environment. In that same way, we need to transmit and communicate value information about where, you know, when prices, when the money triggers the information in society, when the prices shift such that it's obvious that in New York there is a disaster or there is a supply shortage of X resource, and in California there is a surplus of that, it's incredibly slow to move the actual resources. Like, let's say it's wood, you know, like let's say a big hurricane hits on the East Coast and there's a whole lot of extra plywood on the West Coast. The price is what signals, and more importantly than just signals, it's not mere like, oh, there's a news report that they need more wood. It tells the market to the degree the wood is needed. And it tells also, it does not tell, it incentivizes. It essentially begs, it gives the skin in the game reward to actually put plywood in a truck and drive it all the way across the country to take it to where it is most profitable, where it is most desperately needed. And that information cannot be communicated. It cannot provide the function of encouraging, making that signal, of turning that thing on to have someone actually push those resources across that huge continent than with an actual trigger of value, an actual price mechanism. So the information as to the need for those resources transfers almost instantly, but then the resources themselves have to respond to that. And it happens the same way in an organism, in the context of like a central nervous system that responds to, you know, getting more blood flow to this area, or responding to, a wound or a burn, like something like that. And then you have the example of mycelium with Brandon Quidham, which I'll actually put those in the show notes if you haven't listened to that series. It's such a good series of basically taking this analogy to its logical conclusion of, is what would Bitcoin be, and what would we be as a network that Bitcoin enables, and that it is shockingly apt analogy that it behaves like a fungi, a mycelial network. But in that way, I think communication technology, and more specifically, monetary technology, value communication, which requires a thing of value, and the notion of scarcity, which value necessitates. Something cannot achieve a value if it is infinitely abundant. Civilization as a structure to allocate resources and allocate cooperative actions of vast groups of people, vast groups of beings, I think it necessitates a communications technology, and a both from the context of information, language, and money. And as an extension of that, the potential of blockchains, the potential of, and I would almost say, in kind of my thinking, that it's less blockchains and more a form of proof of work as a measure of communicating value. Because I really think proof of work is one of the core pieces of the puzzle, because it's essentially that, like, that is what gold is. The verification of the gold element is the proof of work. If alchemy existed and you could create gold from nothing, gold would simply die. Like, it would no longer be valuable. Alchemy would defeat its own purpose. Knuts Svanholm, in the video we did with Ione, has a great chapter of his book, and Ione incredibly well turned this into a video, which I highly encourage. I'll try to remember to put that link in the show notes too. In that same way, the proof of work is the purpose of money, in the sense that you're able to exchange a token of unforgeability, in a sense. Because the only way an economy can actually allocate is if the means of allocating, the means of exchange, of allocating what amount of what thing goes where, is almost perfectly impossible to alter in supply. This is why I've talked about on this show, and we've read a number of pieces that suggest that, and I think this philosophically makes sense, that the perfect money is actually the money that never actually changes in unit number, that has a completely static supply, because it then becomes the ultimate proof of work that is never diluted, and it is never, it never increases or decreases in relation to the value available in the economy. Therefore, it's essentially that perfect totem of measuring how much value has shifted in the economy, because its supply, you know, the only way to measure exactly how much the supply of TVs and the supply of cars and all of these things have changed in a collective way in how much value it has, is if the thing you're measuring it against is perfectly static. You know, if your inch moves a little bit every time you measure your house, you're not going to get a good measure on how big your house is, and you're going to constantly be shifting around, you know, how much space you're able to measure. But that's not because your house is changing, it's because your unit of measure is inconsistent. And obviously there's no perfect world in the context of accomplishing a perfectly static supply. Even Bitcoin, which has the ultimate only 21 million, will even degrade slightly because Bitcoin are ultimately lost along the way. But it's essentially as perfect as it can get, or at least as it seems right now, you know, barring, you know, another 400 years and some next level breakthrough and just the whole concept. You know, you could have argued that it's insane that Bitcoin is as big of a leap from something like gold. And obviously it was hard to see that coming. But this was the guy's take that I said I wasn't going to do. We will go deeper into this after we get the rest of Dhruv Bansal's phenomenally, just I love this series. It's so much fun to dig into, and it's such a great thought experiment. So we will hit part two, hopefully tomorrow, but very, very soon. Thank you guys. I hope you enjoyed the first part of this piece, and we got the other one coming. So do not forget to subscribe to Bitcoin Audible. A huge thank you to CoinKite, obviously, for their cold card and all their amazing products. Like I said, I just got my Bitcoin, my BlockClock Micro, which I am super stoked about. But also Swan Bitcoin and Fold and the Fold debit card for sponsoring the show and just for, you know, being the products and services that I am a huge, huge fan of and major user of in this space. And lastly, a thank you to the Audionauts and a big welcome to James and Matt, to the Audionaut crew. Awesome to see new people joining. For anybody who isn't aware, all I require is any donation to the show, it's basically my spam filter, and just to know that people actually want to join and be a part of the community. But if you want to come hang out with the Audionauts, you can go to my Patreon, and just as much as $1 or as little as $1 a month will get you in, or you can donate any other way and just show me the invoice and you can come hang out with the Audionauts. It's a really fun crew, and I just wanted to thank those guys as well as all of the Audionauts for being such awesome supporters of the show. All right, guys, thank you so much for listening. I will catch you on the next episode, and until then, everybody, take it easy, guys. It is so easy to be wrong and to persist in being wrong when the cost of being wrong are paid by others. Thomas Sowell.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.